Ask anyone who knows them what single word springs to mind when you say wraiths. And the chances are they'll say, ah. Whereupon you'll say, apart from that, and they'll frown and reply, well, actually it's two words. Does that count? The two words in question are work ethic. The slaves of the curse are the willing horses of evil, the grafters, the first to arrive and the last to leave. If evil had bank holidays, wraiths would spend them at the office, or pounding the trail in all weathers, uncomplaining, conscientious, always putting the job and the outfit first. Some say they do it for the uniform. Others, more cynical, say they have no choice, because of the dark spell that binds and possesses them. And there's an element of truth in that. The power of the rings they wear has long since eaten away the last vestiges of individuality, transforming them into little more than extensions of the dark mind. A hand, the cynics say, could no more disobey the brain than a wraith point out that actually it's owed 6 weeks' paid holiday from last year. And if he wants it done so badly, why doesn't he do it himself? Nearly all wraiths. There are a few who aren't quite so remorselessly enthralled, and it was one of those who happened to be on duty at the station house when the Black One himself came stomping in through the door. Because of the sense of duty thing, nobody in the hierarchy expects wraiths to make themselves deliberately inconspicuous when they're on call, and an unscrupulous officer could use that to her advantage. When the adamantine door flew open and the black voice yelled, "Sharp!" the officer in question was huddled by the fire, trying to keep warm, mostly because her mantle and hood were hanging on a hook behind the door. "I'm going to be in so much trouble," she thought. But possibly not, if she kept perfectly still and quiet as a little mouse. Requiring no breath, she had no need to hold it. The Dark Lord was looking round the room. Then he stopped. He was looking straight at her.
"Lieutenant," he said, "you're out of uniform."
Oh, snot, she thought. So it's true about the black eye.
"Let me guess," the Terrible One went on. "It's honking it down outside, so you've hung your kit up to dry, which accounts for why you're sitting in front of the stove with nothing on. Which is fair enough, yes?"
She tried to agree, but all that came out was a little squeaking noise.
"Thought so," said the voice of the abyss. "Here." He threw her a blanket. "I have to say, this is not the sort of conduct I expect from one of the enthralled. Skiving off, were you?" "Here it comes."
"Yes, sir."
The dark face grinned. "Good on you," he said. "If there's one thing makes me want to throw up, it's sucking up to the boss." "A shortcoming," he added, "to which your lot are distressingly prone." "You won't catch a goblin brown-nosing, I can tell you that." He sat down on the table and let his legs swing. "You the duty spook?"
"Yes, sir."
He nodded. "Got a job for you. Right up your alley, I should think."
"Yes, sir."
Mordack pulled a face. "Oh, don't you start. Try and look a little bit disgruntled and pissed off, if only for my sake. Now then, in the deepest, darkest cell, in the lowest level of the dungeons, there's a goblin."
He drew a claw across his throat. "Capiche?"
"Sir?" "Jolly good. Make a good job of it, and there's a good chance promotion. He must have caught the look of dismay that flicked across her face before she could stop it. "We'll pass you by for some considerable time," he continued smoothly. "Failure, on the other hand, will see you bumped up to captain. So fast, your feet won't touch. Do I make myself clear?"
"Sir."
"Oh, don't do that," he said, a split second too late. She froze the salute as best she could, and he nodded his appreciation. "And you can tell your fellow see-throughs that the next one of them who clicks his heels at me had better be clog dancing. All right, carry on." She didn't manage to catch her breath until he'd been gone for the best part of a minute. The Dark Lord himself. Of all the station houses and guard posts in all the dark strongholds in all the realms, why did he have to walk into hers? Not quite what she'd expected, though. Maybe that was this new evil everyone was so snotty about. If so, she decided she was all for it. "Now then, execute a goblin. Shouldn't be any problem with that." She caught herself shivering, even though she'd put on her mantle and hood. "Shouldn't be any problem," she repeated firmly to herself. "We did it often enough in class, and it can't be much different with a real one. Except that the ones we did in class weren't, well, alive. Shouldn't make any difference, though, should it? Should it? No, of course not. Rule one. The wraith who's tired of killing is tired of life." She knew that all too well, having once had to copy it out 1,000 times for running in the corridors. It had been lodged in her mind for so long that she'd never given it a moment's thought. Even now, if she closed her eyes, she could see good old Miss, or rather, her cardigan, sensible shoes and walnut-sized fake pearls, leading Year 4 in the chant, "What do we do? What are we for? Killing the foes of dear old Snowdor." She could remember the pride and the nervousness as she walked out in front of the whole school on speech day to recite the 52 vulnerable points. Did it well, too. Got them all right and never a stutter. Well now, finally the time had come to put all that into practice. Good. Pull yourself together, girl, and get on with it. She went to her locker and got out her dagger. A genuine snoggle blade. Deeply engraved with black runes. They spelt out her name and class number and the year she'd won Best Improver in Grade 3 Stealth and Menaces. "I expect you'll get lots of use out of it," the headmistress had told her with a big wink. And they'd shaken hands, all very grown up. And she'd backed away, blushing furiously as all her classmates clapped and cheered. She slipped the scabbard into the loops on her belt and straightened her hood in front of the mirror. "For the old school," she thought. "You can't let them down. Not Miss Most Likely to Succeed of FA 2376. 10 minutes later, she was standing outside a cell door, accompanied by a petrified-looking goblin captain.
"There, sir," the captain said. "In there."
"What did you just say?"
"I said that."
"Her?"
"See, you heard me the first time."
"Don't be stupid. It can't be a her. There are no goblin females."
The captain snickered.
"Well, in about 1.5 minutes there won't be. She's the only one. Prototype, he explained. Didn't work out, see? So, clear up the mess and move on.
That sort of nipped at her, like a small, aggressive dog.
What went wrong?
Did she turn out sickly and weak?
Look for yourself.
She threw back her hood, then peered through the window in the cell door. Then she turned back to the captain.
What's wrong with that? She said.
The captain shrugged. They don't bother explaining stuff like that to the likes of me. But my theory is, they're scared.
Scared?
Too right. I mean, if they made a whole bunch more like her, where would the rest of us be? Out of a job is where. Next thing you know, they'd be taking over.
Wraiths do not debate policy with goblins. So she couldn't very well say any of the things that came rocketing into her mind at that point. Just as well, because another thing wraiths simply don't do is criticize the decisions of the dark hierarchy. Fine. Ew, she said. Go away. The goblin saluted smartly and ran away down the corridor. In his haste, he'd forgotten to give her the key to the cell door. Not such an insurmountable problem as you might think. She leaned forward and blew a jet of the black breath into the keyhole. Then she gave the door a smart shove with the heel of her hand. The wards of the lock snapped like icicles, and the door swung inwards. The she-goblin looked up at her and frowned. Not afraid, just puzzled. Listen, can you understand me? The she-goblin started to nod, then appeared to remember something and shook her head. Then she pulled a face and said, Drat.
You can talk.
Yes, but the...
Somebody told me not to.
Listen very carefully. I've been sent to kill you. The she-goblin's eyes grew very round.
Oh, why?
Because you're better than they are, and you're a girl. She waited to see how the she-goblin took it. A slight frown, and a nod that seemed to say, told you so.
I don't think that's fair, she added.
Do you?
I think it's horrid.
Yes, well, actually, I think it's stupid. So this is what we're going to do. The goblin captain was in the guard room with his feet up, eating pickled lips and reading an interesting article in Bows and Arrows, when the door swung open and the wraith strode in. He resisted the temptation to jump to attention.
All done.
What do you think?
That's all right, then. I'll send my lads along to clear away.
A faint, scratchy noise, like fingernails on desiccated skin.
You can if you like.
The captain frowned.
Problem?
She was a tricky one, the wraith replied. Steel wouldn't touch her, not even a snorgle blade. So I froze her with the black breath. You're welcome to try moving the body, but don't expect to have any fingers left afterwards.
The captain pulled a why is it always me face.
Fine, he said. What do you suggest?
Not my job, waste disposal, the wraith said haughtily. I leave the bagging and tagging to the little people, such as yourself. However, she added, if it was my problem, which it isn't, I'd get half a dozen other ranks I never really liked very much,
Tell them to wrap up nice and warm, and send them in there with a couple of long hooks, a handcart, and an old door, or something like that. Haul the deer departed onto the door. Lift the door up on the cart. Wheel it round to the garbage chute, and shoot it out the side of the mountain for the crows to get rid of. Only, whatever you do, don't get any closer than you can help. Not unless you believe frostbite will enhance your appearance. Some time later, she scrambled up the foothills of the mountain to the hole in the rock through which the garbage chute emptied out. She was only just in time. She'd barely draped the net across the outlet when an ominous rumbling made her jump back out of the way. A massive dark shape shot past her and hit the net, which stopped it. She gave it a quick look, then settled down in the shade and read a book for an hour or so, until the horrible yellow face emerged from behind the mountain peak and bathed the outlet in warm golden light. She read a few more pages, then looked up. Water was starting to trickle down the chute in a thin, steady stream. She closed her book and put it away in the folds of her robe, then said, "Hello?" "Hold still," she said. "You're not properly thawed out yet." "I bet you are. But there's not much I can do about it till you're fully defrosted. Till then, don't move, and think happy thoughts." Sometime after that, she threw the she-goblin a rope so she could haul herself off the chute, and stood by with a thick wool blanket. "And don't moan," she said. "I stuck my neck out for you. If anyone ever finds out what I just did, I have an idea that immortality will prove to be something of a mixed blessing." The she-goblin gazed blearily at her over the hem of the blanket. "Thanks," she said, and sneezed. "Oh, that's all right. I'm still not entirely sure why I'm doing all this, bearing in mind it constitutes being nice, and I'm supposed to be the baddest of the bad." She shrugged. "I guess it counts as treachery and betrayal of trust, and you can't get more evil than that, can you?" The she-goblin was picking ice out of her hair. "What do I do now?" "Absolutely no idea. Go out there, be whatever you want to be, fulfill your potential. Just do me a favor and fulfill it a long, long way away from here, all right?" "I promise." "Good. Well, we bad girls have got to stick together, I guess." She waited until the she-goblin was out of sight in the eaves of the wood, then turned round to head back to the fortress. She went about 10 yards, then stopped dead. She said. Mordak, the Dark Lord himself, was sitting cross-legged on a large rock directly ahead of her, nibbling the honey and almond coating off a slice of Swiss troll. "Hello again," he said. "You're supposed to be on duty." "It's all right," Mordak sighed. "I know exactly what you just did, so please don't bother trying to lie to me, because I can see right through you. Or rather," he added, "I can't, but you know what I mean." He threw the rest of the troll behind a shriveled thorn bush. "Oh dear," he said. "What are we going to do with you?"
Rhetorical question," he laughed. "Don't worry," he said. "I'm not going to eat you. In fact,"
he said, stifling a yawn with the back of his paw. I'm not going to do anything to you at all. He paused for a reaction, but she was too frozen to move. Ask me why. That'll do. All right, since you insist, I'll tell you. I'm not going to punish you because it's not your fault. Don't say Thank you. Not my... Mordak shook his head. My fault, he said. In fact, he went on, mumbling ever so slightly, I probably owe you an apology. You? A look of almost infinite weariness crossed the dark face, enough to strike a tiny spark of sympathy in among all that terror, like one lonely away supporter in a sea of home team scarves. I played a trick on you. It was necessary. He grinned feebly. My secretary was giving me a hard time. She had her flinty little heart set on murdering my she-goblin, and I didn't want her to. But surely you're the... His eyes flashed, just a little, but enough to put the truth of what she'd just said beyond any possibility of doubt. Which makes things tricky when it comes to personnel management. The Dark Lord does not reason with underlings. They do as they're told, or they're tomorrow's blue plate special. But she's a really, really good secretary, and I don't want to lose her. So, he added sadly, what do you do? Maybe she'd suspected the truth all along. Or maybe she intuitively knew it, just from their eye contact. You give the order to a wraith, she said, because a wraith is the embodiment of the dark will. We do exactly what you really want us to. He smiled at her. He had a horrible smile, like feeding time at a tooth farm. But under all that grotesquery, there was unmistakable warmth. Got it in one, he said. And it helps if there's one wraith in particular who happens to be a bit different from the others. Difficult. Uppity. Inclined to think about things to an inappropriate extent. She couldn't help it. She smiled back. Like someone else we could mention? Wash your mouth out with brimstone and treacle, Mordak said solemnly. Of course, I'm going to have to go back to Miss Needle Lobes and tell her that owing to gross incompetence on the part of a member of staff, the she-goblins hopped it, and as a result, her precious prophecy still hasn't been derailed. She'll immediately throw a hissy fit and demand that the guilty party be disciplined with the utmost severity. He looked at her, and her heart froze. Done that, I'll tell her, all taken care of. So, she thought, this is it then. She realized that she didn't mind. Whatever happened to her, she knew that she'd fulfilled her purpose, more so than any of her fellow wraiths ever. She'd done what he wanted her to, something he hadn't been able to do himself. It doesn't get any better than that, she thought. Well now, Mordak said gravely. Tell me, have you enjoyed being a wraith? Say yes. No, actually. Not all that much. I mean, it's all right, I suppose, but say yes. Yes. Oh dear, Mordak said. What a shame.
That's really most unfortunate, because to punish you for disobeying orders and letting the she-goblin go, I'd dismiss you from the Order of Wraiths. The spell is lifted. The enthrallment is broken. Be as you were before, a helpless, snivelling mortal. He snapped his fingers, then grinned. There, he said. That wasn't so bad, was it? She stared at him, then down at her bare toes, which were visible. Ditto hands, wrists, forearms. She gazed at the back of her hand and barely recognized it. There was only one thing she could say. She said it. Right, Mordax said briskly. Now, can I have my ring back, please? What? Oh, right. She remembered something. It's not actually a ring. Oh? She shook her head. I'm only a grade 6. Fine, let's be having it, whatever it is. Slowly she undid the catch and let the chain drop off her wrist into her hand. For as long as she could remember, it had weighed her arm down so that she could barely lift it. Now it felt as light as a feather. She held it out and dropped it into his paw. He stared at it. That's it, he said. A charm bracelet. She nodded. That one's a teddy bear, and that's a little Scotty dog. And that's supposed to be a butterfly, but it got a bit squashed when I caught it in a door once. One little Scotty dog to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them. Like I said, she told him, I'm only a grade 6. You were only a grade 6, he said, remarkably gently. Now, get lost. And, thanks. It was as though a cloud had lifted. She beamed at him. My pleasure, she said, and don't worry about me. I'm going to be a model. The model what? A supermodel. Mordax sighed. Fine, he said. I give you the supermodel. Models are something to be overcome. Now, bugger off before anyone sees you.